You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
On November 8th, 1998, the San Francisco 49ers went down to Carolina to play the fledgling Panthers in a regular season game that turned into kind of a heater. It came all the way down to a 57-yard John Casey field goal attempt for Carolina to win the game that he unfortunately couldn't connect on. And the final score was 25-23, 49ers. In that game, there were two people who are very relevant to our podcast today. One was Irv Smith Sr., who was playing for the 49ers at the time. He had just finished out his time in the NFL with the Saints, and he was kind of doing a journeyman end of his career thing, and in a similar place was a guy named Corbin Lacina, who played guard for the Panthers. Little did they know that all the way 22 years later, both of those men would have sons that meet in Vikings training camp. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Locked On Vikings, brought to you by Built Bar, the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. If you go to BuiltBar.com, you can get $10 off of your first order by entering promo code LOCKEDON. I'm your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at LockedOnVikings. You can find the show anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, like Spotify, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, whatever you like, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. And today I'm going to tell you a couple stories. One is of Jake Lacina, the son of that guard, Corbin. He is an undrafted free agent who's trying out for the Vikings this year. And of course, the other is Irv Smith. We're going to talk about his story and a little bit about his prospects for the 2020 season. I'm really excited about his chances to really break out, and we're going to talk about it. But first, I want to talk about Jake Lacina, of course, son of Corbin. So Corbin Lacina played in the NFL, and notably, he had a three-year stint with the Vikings. Or four-year stint, from 99 to 2002, kind of the end of the Denny Green into the Mike Tice era. And during that time, a young Jake Lacina, a little toddler, was just getting old enough to comprehend what was going on the field when his dad would go out and play. He was 3, 4, 5, 6 years old, just kind of starting to grasp the concepts of football. And so, of course, he fell in love with the Vikings. And even though Corbin Lacina played most of his career with the Buffalo Bills, his son became a huge Vikings fan, would wear Vikings gear everywhere he went and would always wear his dad's jersey around. So when it came time to start, thinking about playing football, it was no surprise that Jake Lacina wanted to play and he wanted to get in there. And I mean, think about it. I think a lot of people can actually relate to this. You know, if you were around my age, you were a kid during the prime, like Chris Carter, Randy Moss, that like era of the Vikings, that really awesome time. But you got to like meet him after every game. Oh my God, I would be hooked for. I didn't even get close to like meeting the players on the field. I must have gone to like an autograph thing maybe once or twice, but I went to some games in the stands, and I mean, of course, I'm like hooked for life and I do a podcast about it now. So I couldn't imagine actually being able to like meet those heroes and have them be like friends with your dad. I could not imagine how cool that is. Now, Jake had an older brother, Nick, who, as they were growing up, you know, would kind of be the athlete, and Jake would be kind of tagging along. He'd be the one, you know, to play catch with. He'd be the one to, you know, catch while Jake tried to pitch, and you know, he would kind of do the little brother thing. So when it was time for him to actually, like, declare what he wanted to do for football, he wanted to switch to tight end, get a little bit of glory. But his father, who was the coach, by the way, had just started coaching at Creighton-Durham Hall, which, if you aren't from Minnesota, Creighton-Durham Hall is like an elite football school in Minnesota. Tons of NFL players come out of there. Matt Burke comes to mind. There's probably a bunch of others. But it's a really big football like prep school. And Corbin Lacina was the coach at Creighton-Durham Hall at the time. And he said, no, you're not switching to tight end. You're going to keep playing offensive line. And that kind of seems like, whoa, like let the kid play what he wants to play. He's like a freshman in high school. But it turns out later when asked about it, he's like, yeah, he was slow and his hands suck. And it's just like this absolutely brutal way. It's such a like 90s dad, like, oh, of course I'm not going to put you in a tight end. You can't catch. It's like so, you just don't see that kind of thing anymore, which is, I think it's so funny. But anyways, he sticks at offensive line, and his first year, he doesn't crack the starting lineup. Even though his dad is the coach, he's just getting outplayed by kids, and he's only like 130-pound freshman. He's this tiny little kid. Now in high school, you know, the kid across from you is also 14 and maybe hasn't filled out yet, so it's not quite as big a deal as it is, you know, in the NFL, but that's way too small. He never is going to get it. But he kind of takes it to heart, and he really hunkers down, and he works on angles and footwork, and he gets really good at, like, the technical aspects of playing. Now, in high school, it's around like late in your sophomore year when you start to actually get offers. And at that time, Jake Lacina, he'd started to play a little bit, but he still was sub 200 pounds. So he was not getting any offers at all. He didn't get any interest from any colleges, and he doesn't end up being able to get into a program, even though he ends up being a really good offensive lineman and a good athlete by the time he's, you know, senior and he's fully filled out and he's like a big, you know, big enough guy to play offensive line. All he's got is like D2 schools. But wouldn't you know it, he gets an offer from Augustana in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, which wouldn't be noteworthy were it not where Corbin Lacina went to college before he went to the NFL. And there it kind of became clear that maybe the recruiting process might have missed out on someone here, because after he does a true freshman redshirt year, he starts 45 straight games at center, he wins D2 Remington Awards, and starts to get a little bit of NFL buzz. Now, he's one of these kids that unfortunately, going out for the draft, when you're a small school kid, and then COVID happens and you can't go to anyone's pro day, you know, a lot of times these kids will go to like NDSU's pro day or something, right? Or go to the University of Minnesota's pro day or Iowa, something close to where they are in Sioux Falls, and they can get out there and maybe get in front of a coach, and that's kind of how a lot of these small school kids get drafted. But there was no pro day. COVID-19 canceled everything, and so all they had could do is like, I don't know, send out a tape, and how many small school kids are sending out tapes to all these scouting departments? You'll never ever make it out of the crowd, even if you're really good and you have all these great stats. So he's waiting with his whole family throughout day three of the draft. Of course, he declares for the draft and all that, and he does not get drafted. But very soon after it becomes clear he's not going to get drafted, he gets a phone call from the Minnesota Vikings, who have been scouting him, who have, I mean, he's a team captain and everything. Of course, the Vikings have been looking for all that, been talking about that a lot. And they say, hey, we want to bring you into camp and give you a shot to make this team. And then the family goes completely wild. Of course, Corbin Lacina, who played for the Vikings, and Jake, who was a Vikings fan, and like all of this stuff really, really comes around. And the fact that he was just like a late bloomer in high school was really like the chief reason that he wasn't getting a lot of attention. He just was too small, so no big colleges found him, and then he got big, but by the time he got big, he was out of the spotlight, and he didn't really have a chance to prove himself, and now he finally gets that chance. He's got a good scheme fit, and he's got decent athleticism and stuff, and he's definitely like a wild card we don't really know a lot about, because there's not a lot of tested athleticism that we can do, and you know, we have a lot of uncertainty surrounding him, but there's a lot of uncertainty at the bottom of that offensive line group, and if he can crack it, or even crack the practice squad, and maybe come back next year when things thin out a little bit, he might actually have a chance to carve a weird little career just like his dad did. So the rest of the podcast is going to be about Irv Smith, both his story and his 2020 prospects. But first, I want to talk to you about something a little more serious. The Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, have all made personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to an additional $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/blacklivesmatter. I also want to talk to you about the sponsor for today's episode, Built Bar. Like I said at the top, Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And I think it kind of lives up to that name. Like, it's a really nice little chocolatey bite that's great in the morning or great after a workout, because it's not too sweet. It's like a more developed and like rich, that kind of chocolatey bitterness that you love with like a dark chocolate. That's what I get more out of it. And they have a ton of different flavors for you to choose from. There's like a mint chocolate. There's like a raspberry chocolate. There's like a double fudge if you want to be really decadent. And even some weird ones like orange chocolate if that's your speed. So if you want in on that, go to builtbar.com. and enter promo code Locked On. You can get $10 off of your first order. That's promo code Locked On at builtbar.com. So just like Jake Lacina followed in his father Corbin's footsteps, Irv Smith, of course, very famously followed in his dad's footsteps. But it didn't always look like it was going to be that way. So, of course, you know, Irv Smith, was a tight end in the NFL, carved out a nice little, like, almost a decade of a career for himself. You know, grew up to be about 270, play tight end in the NFL. His brother, Ed Smith, grew up to be about 6'4", 255, played a little baseball before he actually had a cup of coffee as a tight end in the NFL as well. So with Irv Smith Jr. growing up, it was pretty clear he was going to want to play football, and he begged and he begged and he begged, and as the story often goes, you know, the parent finally caves and lets him into football in middle school or in high school, and then it totally catches on, and you can see their eyes brighten, and you know that that's going to be the thing forever now. So 8th grade, Irv Smith gets on the field for the first time. He wants to play a bunch of wide receiver, and he's a little bit slight. He, like, hasn't quite filled out yet, right? As, you know, kids around that 13, 14-year-old, you know, he's not a fully grown kid yet. So he wants to play wide receiver. And his dad jokes around, like, nope, you are definitely going to get too big. There's no way you're going to be a wide receiver if you play all the way into adulthood. You're going to be a tight end just like me. And he just, like, knows, right? He knows the kid's going to fill out. And Irv Smith also played basketball at the time, so maybe that kind of factored into it. You know, he would bring the ball up on offense, and he would be the guy that was tasked with, like, guarding their star on defense. So he was kind of used to being the playmaker, being the guy, and he's like, no, I'm going to be an X receiver. I am going to be, like, the go-to playmaking guy. That's just what I do. And he kind of got into that mentality. And so there was a little bit of a state of denial of, like, no, you're going to be, like, 260, 270. You cannot be a wide receiver at that size. It's just way too big, and there's nothing you can do about it. So this continues as he, you know, gets too big to play wide receiver. He eventually goes into tight end, and he starts joking with his coach about that. And he says, well, why don't you just line me up at tackle then? And the coach, as it so happens, is going into a game against Patterson High School, and they realize that they have an advantage if they switch one of their tackles over to the other side and kind of do a six offensive line, do like an unbalanced set. And then on that side, replacing that tackle would be Irv Smith, basically turning their tight end into a glorified tackle for the game. And boy, howdy, does it work. They run for like 400 some yards. They beat the pants off this poor team, put up like 49 points. But really, that's the moment when Irv Smith realizes, oh, wow, I can block. It's kind of fun to block. I don't hate this. Tight end maybe is the place for me. And he starts to kind of think about it. At that same time, he's starting to decide like where he's going to go to college. He's got a bunch of offers on the table from Bama and LSU and Tulane and a bunch of places. And he's deciding where he's going to go for not only like where he's going to play, but also what's going to give him the best chance to make it in the NFL. And I'm sure having both Ed, his brother, and Irv Smith Sr., his father, who've both been in the NFL, giving him some advice might help him out with this kind of decision. But he starts thinking, all right, so Alabama at this time, OJ Howard's in his senior year. And O.J. Howard hasn't worked out too great on the Bucks, but he was like a god at Alabama, if you remember, right? He was like this huge player, and he was a first-round draft pick. And he's in his senior year, so Irv Smith is thinking, all right, so they've got a superstar in his senior year. I go there 1 year, I learn under him, he graduates, and then I take over, and I can put together a nice little college career and maybe get myself into the NFL. And that turns out to be like pretty prescient. He actually works that out pretty well. And one of the things that he talks about when he talks about the transition between wide receiver and tight end, which takes a while, he goes into his freshman year and he plays at wide receiver, doesn't play a lot, and then he actually switches officially to tight end, I think, in his sophomore year. And one of the things he talks about is, you know, hey, I was either going to be a fast tight end or a slow wide receiver. He knew he was an athlete, and, you know, he knew he was like a jock and he could really do it. But it was, you know, if he's going to be that big, he's going to be slow at wide receiver. And when it comes time to the combine, I think he ran like a 4.63, which I always say, just for perspective, is slower than Laquon Treadwell. So yeah, he would have been a dreadfully slow receiver, but that's really fast for a tight end. So sure enough, and there's a couple of games where, you know, Bama blows out some poor like Tennessee squad and he gets a bunch of production out of the tight end position, or he has a bunch of good time blocking, and he ends up being this really nice like move tight end type prospect. And he thinks maybe he could even go in the first round. Obviously it doesn't work out that way, and he falls to the Vikings at pick 50, I think it was, in 2019. But he's actually pretty stoked about that, and this is probably just lip service, right? Of course you go, yeah, oh, I'm so glad I got drafted to this team, no matter what team it would be, right? Of course he'd say that. But it does kind of make sense. They had just hired Gary Kubiak, who is famous for using two tight ends, a ton of tight end work, so you know you're going to get on the field. Even though Kyle Rudolph is there, that's obviously not going to stop him. And it kind of turns out that way, actually. Irv Smith and Kyle Rudolph run about the same number of routes. I think Rudolph runs like 30 more routes. They both run like 300 some. So it does work out for Irv Smith in his rookie year. Of course, he's got reasonable production, pretty good rookie year for a tight end, and gets a lot more of the deep targets in terms of like actual route share than Kyle Rudolph does. So he definitely turns into the, like, I'm going to be the deep route tight end type. If you need to send somebody up the seam, that's going to be Irv Smith now. And he actually talks on a podcast with Kirk Cousins. Of course, Kirk did his Under Center podcast, which is really fun. He does a pretty good job as a podcast host, actually. I really enjoy those. And he did one with Irv Smith where he kind of talked about like Irv Smith's role and how, all right, yeah, we get this guy up against a Will linebacker. He's going to be absolutely faster than that Will linebacker. Like, he's about as fast as Anthony Barr. So if your linebacker isn't faster than Anthony Barr, which like nobody's linebacker is faster than Anthony Barr, they might not be able to keep up with Irv Smith. And that's the kind of matchup problem that they utilize. I think his first touchdown in the NFL sparks a 20-point comeback against the Broncos. Like, that's a pretty good momentous occasion to get your first touchdown. I guess another touchdown against the Chargers. I think there's one against the Lions somewhere in there. He has a really nice little rookie year. So now he's headed into 2020. He's the bona fide second tight end, maybe the first tight end. We're about to talk about that. And he's like got his place in this offense, and he can start carving out an NFL career that mirrors or even exceeds his father's. But before I go too deep into that, I want to talk to you about rockauto.com. Rockauto.com is a one-stop shop for all of the car parts or truck parts that you need for your car or truck, respectively. And the nice thing about Rock Auto is, as opposed to the brick and mortar, you know, AutoZone type stores that you might go to for this kind of thing, for one, they're like definitely going to have your model in and you know, the right part for your car. And it's a really easy interface to browse. And it's so deep. It's unbelievable, like, how many options they have. They will have exactly what you need for your car, all the way down to your make, model. You'll definitely get what you need. And the other thing is, it's a lot cheaper because they have to compete with those brick and mortar stores. And the thing about a car part store is usually you need the car part and you can't exactly go drive around to a bunch of stores because your car's broken or something, right? So they can kind of upcharge you, and Rock Auto doesn't have that luxury, so they have to kind of cut you a deal. So it's really worth checking out. Go to rockauto.com, and in the comment section when you check out, it would be great if you told them that Locked On sent you. Okay, so let's get to the white hot take that I put in the title, that Irv Smith will supplant Kyle Rudolph. This is not going to be an anti-Kyle Rudolph take. I had a bunch of those last offseason. He had a fine season. He was good in the red zone, and hopefully he can continue to do that. That's a little bit less reliant on athleticism. You just kind of have to be big and have good technique, which, you know, you don't really age out of that. So Kyle Rudolph can kind of do the Jason Witten thing and be around forever. I think the idea that he'll be like a major part of the offense is where it gets a little bit suspect. And this is kind of what I was worried about when the Vikings extended him last offseason, was, you know, what role are you really going to get out of Kyle Rudolph? He'll have good hands. He'll be able to run sound routes, but he's not going to beat anybody, deep. He's not going to do anything like that. But you do have Irv Smith for that. And I think that is at the crux of why I think Irv Smith is going to get more production. If you look at the Kubiak scheme and you look at like what the Vikings are going to try to do, it's probably going to mirror last year as much as they can. Of course, the personnel change, they don't have Diggs, they do have Jefferson, they're going to have to tweak some things, but it's going to be, I think, the same DNA, right? A lot of outside zone, a lot of play action looks that look like outside zone that then lead to big deep shots or 15-yard, you know, over routes that with hopefully the middle of the field wide open because the play action cleared everything out. That's kind of how they did things last year, and it works great. It was an unbelievably good thing in 2019, so there's not much reason to think that they're going to like make big changes to that, although I think they should, because defensive coordinators are going to be all over this. Usually the ping pong goes that defensive coordinators figure it out, and then offensive coordinators will go change things once they start getting beat. So all this is to say that you're probably going to get plenty of deep passing again. I would be surprised to see the offense move to like a quick Drew Breesy, get the ball out quick kind of passing game. Even if, you know, Josh Klein doesn't come back and the offensive line sucks and stuff, you know, they're going to kind of try to use play action as a pseudo offensive line, pseudo protection thing to buy more time for Cousins to look deep and get stuff. They'll still have plenty of deep routes to Adam Thielen. They'll still have plenty of deep routes to Justin Jefferson in place of Stephon Diggs. I think they're going to do plenty of that, but you are also going to, I think, see an uptick in usage for Irv Smith out of that tight end position, out of those play action looks. A lot of times he'll be the guy who's second in that progression. And one of the things here is, I think we can all agree that we shouldn't expect the same wide receiver production that we got in 2019. Justin Jefferson just is not Stephon Diggs. Adam Thielen's a year older. There's really good reason to believe that that's going to regress. And as the Vikings want to be smart about that, they can kind of subvert that regression by utilizing a guy like Irv Smith more, who's on the up and up, and kind of adjusting that market share. analytically, that's not typically very sound. You don't generally want to take away wide receiver targets and give them to tight end targets, even if even if your tight end is prime Rob Gronkowski and your wide receivers are whoever, usually wide receiver targets still just tend to encompass the routes that do better. Things like go routes and posts that are like the best routes. You don't really see tight ends running that, even if your tight end is Gronkowski. So like doing that is maybe not the most analytically sound thing. But I still kind of think, like, if you have Brandon LaFell and Rob Gronkowski, you're going to run your offense through Rob Gronkowski. Analytics and league-wide averages be damned. And I think we could see a little bit of that. I don't think they're going to go, like, all the way into it, but I could see a shift in that direction where wide receiver production kind of deflates a little bit as Justin Jefferson figures it out, depending on if Adam Thielen stays healthy and stuff, and then you have, like, BC Johnson and, KJ Osborne and stuff and whatever you're going to do down there, Tajay Sharpe or whatever. And meanwhile, you have Irv Smith, who you can send up the seam, you can send between safeties. I think that middle of the field open looks are going to get a lot more popular this year, so sending safety up the seam in that way might become something that's a better opportunity. And what I mean by that is, we've seen a ton of cover three, which is a middle of the field close look, right? Because there's one, two, three guys, so there's a guy in the middle in cover three. And that means the middle of the field is closed. So like a seam route up the middle where you tell him, hey, run toward the goalpost from, lined up like in line, like tight ends usually are, you're going to run right at their like center field safety. You're not going to be open. And that's kind of been the case. The Cowboys run a ton of it. Of course, the Seahawks still run a ton of it. The Vikings ran a ton of it for a while and they kind of moved away from it after, mainly after Sean McVay kicked Zimmer's butt in Thursday Night Football in 2018. Then they kind of moved away from it and started doing their own thing. But you have still a ton of popularity of cover three. I think the Broncos use it a ton and their defense is very famed. So cover three is still all over. And I think defenses are going to start adapting, the ones that are capable of doing so at least, to more two high looks, more utilizing more cover two and cover four. Even the cover three teams will still come out in those coverages every so often. So it's just a matter of kind of fiddling with the dials of how often you call each coverage. And I think teams will start to call more cover two and cover four as the spread and the four verts and all the stuff that all of these NFL offenses are starting to do, the Lamar Jacksons and the Mahomeses and stuff and guys, throwing deep all the time and running around. I think having more safeties come in from like deep or lining up deep is going to be something that we see more. And that means that sending a tight end up the seam might be something better. Now, this could be completely like big brain, galaxy brain nonsense, and I'm just shooting from the hip here because it's June. And maybe, I don't know, but I think that Irv Smith gives you a really great opportunity to take advantage of that, especially if everybody's taking their safeties out of the box because they're worried about, Lamar Jackson just running around them, and, you kind of want to have those guys play more deep center field, so you don't get beat deep, or, you don't get beat deep by like Mecole Hardman or whatever. If everybody's going to start doing that, that kind of means more linebackers on Irv Smith. And that means that you can get Irv Smith to do more things. He's coming into his second year, of course. There, you would probably expect an uptick in production there. So all of this is to say that I think Irv Smith is going to have definitely a better year than 2019. I'd be really surprised if his 2020 wasn't better than his 2019. But the thing about Kyle Rudolph is that Kyle Rudolph is going, I think, to transition to a much more specific role that I think fits where he's at in his career right now, right? He is not going to be the one running, at least if they can help it. Of course, you can't do this like cut and dry, never do this, because then you become predictable. But so much as they can help it, they're probably not going to have Kyle Rudolph running, deep posts or deep overs on a big, bootleg concept. He's going to be running quick outs and stick routes, maybe option routes, things that convert a third and four, and he'll have his role in the red zone. But if you're Gary Kubiak and you want to design, or you want to dial up, say, just a really classic play action look with like a Yankee concept in there, right? Or some kind of like deep over stress the safety kind of concept where, say, you have play action, you have Adam Thielen run a deep post, you have somebody on the other side, if it's like Justin Jefferson or even like BC Johnson or whatever, run a go down that way, you have, say, maybe Justin Jefferson from the slot run like an over kind of underneath that deep post. And then you have something like Irv Smith lining up, kind of crossing against both of those Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen routes. That's a pretty common play action thing. I want Irv Smith in that. If you're going to have him go like have to run deep and kind of float over, find a hole in the zone, For one, I think Irv Smith can find that hole in the zone. And for two, I think he can do so with more athleticism than Kyle Rudolph. And I think that's what the Vikings are going to want to do, is to use those on those deep, long developing plays, get somebody who can get to their spot a little bit faster, and leave Kyle Rudolph in to block. Or I guess Kyle Rudolph wouldn't be on the field in this case, because I already said that there's three wide receivers, but you get where I'm going with that. This is by no means like a benching of Kyle Rudolph or something. I think it's more of a passing of the torch where, and I think the way, and when I want to go back, somebody remind me at the end of the season, because I'll totally forget, but somebody remind me at the end of the season to come check in on this take. And if I'm wrong, you can bully me online or whatever. But the way I'm going to stake this take is with routes run and yards per route run. And I think Irv Smith will overtake Kyle Rudolph in both in 2020. So there you go. I've planted my flag. And that's going to wrap it up for me on this episode of Locked On Vikings. Thank you guys so much for hanging out and listening. I will be back tomorrow with an interview I'm excited to do. Hopefully that turns out the way. Hopefully we don't have any scheduling things. But barring any of that, I have a really cool interview I'm excited about. So get hyped for that. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. The show is available anywhere you find your favorite podcasts, or you can ask your smart device to play podcast Locked On Vikings. I will see you all tomorrow, and as always, skull.